The Gurus of How To are here, Al and Larry Ubell. And they come by once a month to help us, guide us through life, giving us answers, helping us with our home repair questions and related matters.
Yeah, with gravity and all the things that bring the earth together. And
oh, we're going to deal with gravity today?
You want to know something? That's one of the major things you ask a whole architectural and engineering class that they come to your class. And you say, what is the single most important thing that you consider? And that's gravity.
Hmm.
When you build it, you have to think of it.
Mm-hmm. But I have to tell you, with the home repair issue, which is why we're here, you're working with me here. It's really great. I'm going to be supportive. Anyway, with the whole home repair issue, that when I'm going through homes doing inspections, I'm almost giving a crash course on home repair as you go through these things, because you don't get an owner's manual with a home. You usually get just a handshake and a pat on the back and a good look.
Why don't we put one of those things together?
We should.
They made a movie called Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House, which was about that very problem.
Right, but it's hard to reference when you actually have a particular problem. So that's part of what, you know, I'm trying to get everybody to say, you know, a lot of these things you can do yourself. They're not that complicated, and they would save you a lot of money.
And we'll be taking calls in just a few moments. Our number again, 212-433-9692, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. And lots of people do when the two of you visit us. You also brought a quiz. I'm going to read it because I want to speed us right through and get us onto
the calls
as quickly as possible.
I'm a slow reader.
The quiz, okay?
Go ahead.
There's a prize. What's the name given to a device that controls a wheel or bar to turn or to be extended incrementally in one direction or in reverse? Okay, if you know the answer, call that same number, 212-433-9692, and you'll be given a prize.
Yes, the Save Energy, Save Money by George Merlis and Al Ubell.
And should we get right to the calls, or is there anything that you think is a pressing matter right now that we suddenly find ourselves in spring, at least a couple of weeks ahead?
I'm already getting calls on cleaning your air conditioning.
Well, I'm getting people on, you should just go out and walk and breathe in and enjoy the weather. That's what I'm telling you should do before anything breaks.
Donald from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, fellas. Quick question. I've got a 1903 brownstone. I want to resurface the basement floor that's crumbling. It was some kind of cementitious, whatever they used way back when. And I want to level it at the same time. I've heard about epoxies and things. What do you guys recommend?
Well, I have to say that the reason that your floor is most likely cracking and deteriorating is because way back when, they didn't really pour a sufficient amount of concrete on these floors. Usually they only poured 1 to 2 inches, which is, I would imagine, if any pieces have fallen out, that's about the dimension of the thickness of the concrete. And so it's going to continue to do that. These days, the standard is at least 4 inches thick for any floor that's going to be walked on.
Now, why is that? Does concrete actually suffer from being walked on?
Yeah.
Well, it deflects.
I mean, I thought it's like really heavy.
Well,
strong
if you take
stuff.
A look, if you think about it, on a basement floor, it's like one big piece of glass. And what happens is that any little deflection, it has a crack in it.
But what about reinforcing it, just sticking little metal filings in it when you do that?
You need filings will only make it waterproof, but what reinforced bars, it goes into it, that gives it the tensile strength that the concrete needs. But at that, it still needs the 4 inches, and the reinforced rod goes right in the middle of it. If it's only 2 inches thick, you don't have any space to put the rods in.
So what does Donald do? Does he just stick 2 more inches of concrete on his floor?
No. One of the other things is, why does it have to be 4 inches thick? Is because, we take rock, grind it down, dehydrate it, now we're reconstituting it. So it needs more mass to hold together just so it is. What he really needs to do, the best way to do it, it would be to break up the entire floor and re-pour.
We did this at our office when we moved in. We broke up the whole bottom.
It was the same situation we're describing. A very thin floor, looked like a mess. We took it out, put 4 inches down, and haven't had a crack since.
And we're there now over 25 years.
Exactly. So that is to just pour re-leveling materials and things like that won't do the job.
How much is this going to cost, Donald?
How big?
Well, it's
you mind my asking for you, Donald?
That's
what you've been thinking, right? Oh my God, how much is this going to cost?
Donald, first of all, is it a finished basement?
No, I'm trying to finish at least a room for the kids, and it's not level. I've heard about epoxies being poured on.
Yeah,
and,
you could do that, but it's
pebble epoxy.
You can do it. You can do it, just don't expect it to be forever.
Uh huh.
don't expect it will be good for a while, and then it will be bad again.
And then you'll sell the house.
Yes.
Because what about a piece stone mixed with the epoxy coating? Is that strong?
But it won't ever really bond to the concrete, and it will still keep happening. As far as square footage, just figure about what is concrete these days? About $5 to $10?
$5 to $10. It depends upon how they got to take it out, whether they can get the concrete into the basement there easily, if they do have to use a wheelbarrow, or if they can use a chute.
Yeah.
You know, it depends upon how the configuration of the house is.
Yeah. It could be costly.
Good luck, Donald. Okay, let's go to Leroy in Metuchen, New Jersey. Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. What's your question?
I had a new shingle roof put on my house about 8 years ago.
Okay.
It's a cape. And right now I've got black stains on the roof where the water runs off the dormers.
Okay.
How can I get rid of those black stains?
Well, really, if it's a shingled roof and it's a granular finish and everything else, the only thing you could do is not power wash it. If you power wash those kind of shingles, you deteriorate them very quickly. The only thing you can do is hose it down, maybe add a little bit of chlorine bleach with a little liquid detergent into a siphon. But you really can't vigorously clean asphaltic or those kinds of shingles.
But the problem is not so much how to clean it. It's how come it's happening.
Yeah, that's what I don't know.
And the reason is either one of two things. Either one is that the material is coming off your shingles, I mean the material of the dormer, and washing onto the material, or the reason is just a concentration of water with a lot of dirt in it anyway. And one of the things you might want to do is figure out how to disperse that water over a bigger area in front of the shingle so it doesn't discolor it like in one concentrated area. So that would be the other thing. But it's happening because some dirt or something is coming off the roof.
Off of something else. Or it could be a fungal growth if it's a shaded roof and that turns black also.
Yeah, but it's only happening where the water is draining, correct?
Happening in one spot where the water is draining. But it is a shaded area.
It also could be the propensity of your particular shingle to pick up the dirt, because there are other shingles that don't do that.
So, okay. Good luck.
What?
We go now to Paul. Hi, Paul.
Yeah,
from Lower Manhattan.
Yes.
I got a sort of strange problem. There's a guy in my building who seems to know a lot of things, and I presented a problem to him, and he was stumped.
Yeah.
When I turn on my electric kettle, or I turn on my toaster, or things like that, heavy things that suck in a lot of juice.
Yeah.
My lights get brighter.
Brighter or dimmer?
Brighter.
Brighter.
Yeah.
Well, what could be happening is that there is something out of balance in the electrical services, and usually this is probably a three-wire system, has two 110 and then one neutral.
Right.
And what happens is that there is when there's a lot of energy being used from one place, and then all of a sudden the weaker place takes even more electricity, all of a sudden the power shifts over to the other side. In other words, the system has to be rebalanced. The only one who could rebalance a circuit for a building is an electrician that understands the balancing mechanism of how many watts there are on one leg as adverse to how many watts are on the other leg.
Right. Now, is this a problem? I mean, okay, so the lights get a little brighter. Seems to me that's not the worst thing that could happen.
It's not a problem. It's just annoying.
Right.
That's
right.
All it is.
Live with it, okay?
Touche, I like that.
The alternative is to have to call in an electrician.
It ain't broke, but so don't fix it.
But it does seem that this probably is a balance issue, or that when he plugs in these high consumption devices, that is throwing the balance out, and maybe it's ones on one leg, ones on another. It would have to take major analysis. But it is discernible why it's happening.
Right.
The Gurus of How To are here, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York, Alan, Larry, Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a quiz. We invite you to take your chance in answering, what is the name given to a device that controls a wheel or bar to turn or to be extended incrementally in one direction or in reverse?
Mm-hmm.
And our number is 212-433-9692. Stephen from Williamsburg, you're on the air.
What's up, Stephen?
Love the segment of the show.
Great.
I'm trying to install a rooftop garden. I live in a three-story brownstone. I don't have a parapet or anything like that. I'm concerned about, you know, things like weight loads and not, you know, nothing blowing off and hit anybody below. But do you have any recommendations on how to sort of, the best sort of system for, you know?
Well, first of all, you have to, if you live in the city of New York, you cannot occupy the entire roof. You can only occupy maybe about 25 to 30% of the roof for that purpose alone. The strongest part of it depends upon how the building is built, whether you have a bearing wall in the middle of the building, and it is also supporting the roof joists. If it is not, the only way you can put flower pots are around the perimeter next to the parapet wall, where the strongest part of the joists happen to be.
Now, wait. I just want to ask Stephen. Are you just talking about putting pots there or putting other kinds of things soil in them?
I want to do a sort of like a rack system where I have you know, large Rubbermaid containers or maybe wooden containers.
Let me jump in here before we collapse your building. what I would like to suggest that there are architects and consultants out here who specialize just in this, and I think most of them live in your neighborhood. Okay, I'm serious. Most of them live in Williamsburg, and that's what they do. And there are calculations, like in our standard building, if we're going to add some X amount of weight to a roof in the form of soil and plants and water and so on, and these joists were only designed for a live load and a dead load and a snow load or rain load of a certain amount, then by
25 to 30 pounds.
You're doing is going to throw things out. So there are people who consult on this thing who can help you reinforce the roof so it is safe. I can't teach you how to do one on a radio show, and I'm certainly not going to try, but it's something that you need to do, and there are people out there who service this need. Okay.
Thank you for your call. Jan, you're on the air.
Hi. I hope you can help me.
Yeah,
well, we do too.
That's what we're here for. Go ahead.
Please help me, help me. I have a radiator. I've been in this apartment for centuries.
Yes.
And it worked fantastic up to about 3 or 4 years ago. Uh-huh. And the heat still comes up. That's no problem. But I can't shut it off. And you put a new valve on the bottom there when you turn it. And it still doesn't work.
Does the valve not turn?
No, it turns. It just doesn't shut it off.
Now, here's something I need to ask, because a lot of times, since a lot of buildings put out a ton of heat, the whole pipe gets hot, and it actually could just be the pipe transmitting the heat through the pipe into your radiator. The question I need to ask you is that when you think it's off and you touch the far end of the radiator, is the far end even hot?
I was on the top floor, so sometimes...
No, I'm talking about the radiator.
No, I know. Sometimes the far end doesn't go... It's not that hot, no.
Okay. So the thing is the problem is now we're talking about a heat transfer problem, not a steam problem.
Yeah, right. By conductivity.
Yeah, by the conductivity, the heat is just in the pipe, and the pipe is just transmitting the heat all the way through to your radiator. And because you're on the top floor, you said?
Right.
Yeah. Well, that's all the heat goes up, and so it's all trying to get up as high as possible, and it's actually by conduction, not by steam, coming in and making your radiator hot.
But also,
I'm not sure what to do to stop that.
Yeah, but the other thing is, how old is the building, by the way?
Over 100.
That valve is probably as old as...
No, she said they just changed it.
They just changed it?
Yes.
Yeah, it still doesn't work.
It's still...
Then it's a conductivity problem.
What I want you to do next time, and next time it gets very hot, which is probably not going to be for a few days, but next time it gets hot, make sure the valve is off and touch the far end opposite the valve of the radiator. And if it's not getting hot, then you definitely have a conductivity problem.
Is there anything that can be done?
Not much, because you would have to put some kind of insulator between it. I don't know if they make them in steam.
Well, they do. It worked up to about 3 years ago.
I can't tell you.
They may just be sending out more heat now than they did 3 years ago.
They could be more pressure or something like that.
Or maybe the simplest answer is the valve is not working.
It could be. That has like a spindle-type seat valve, and sometimes the seat... deteriorates at that location.
Maybe they need to replace it. Let's give that one more shot, okay?
James from Queens, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have a problem in my house.
Yes.
They had construction going on in the streets, which is just recently finished, and I saw cracks in the wall and the ceiling and around the foundation. I was told to write to the engineer, which I'm doing. But how do I get a true inspection to see the extent of the damage?
Well, first of all, in order to get the extent of the damage, somebody should have been in that building immediately upon them commencing their construction in order to document the condition of the building immediately if there's any cracks that were there prior to the commencement of construction. And then all of the cracks have to have data marks placed
on them. Well,
hold on.
Let me. Is this your home?
It's my home.
It's your home. You need to start taking pictures of all the conditions that exist immediately, and you also need to call up the buildings department,
311,
and say that your building is suffering irreparable damage and you need them to stop construction.
And what happened when you called?
No, what they're doing, they're putting new store pipes, and they use these heavy equipment to...
This is the city doing
it.
Even if it is the city, the building department can put a stop order on the city themselves because they're more concerned about the stability of a structure that may be deteriorating because of their work. So there is a process that is in place.
I also would highly recommend that you get advice of counsel at this point also. That you get a lawyer and you start talking to him about what your rights are as far as the damages
The city has to have notice, and that's a very important thing. They have to know that things are going on.
Yeah, I called them immediately. They came, and they didn't want to come inside. And they told me to take pictures, and of course, it was continuing,
Well, they have to take pictures in a special.
No, but they didn't. They didn't want to come inside.
They didn't want to come in. I could tell you why, because then they would be liable. Once they get inside, then there's what they call notice or even constructive notice of exactly what's taking place in the building. They don't want to know.
So in other words, he should get a lawyer.
Yes,
now.
Absolutely.
You need to get a lawyer.
Sorry about that, James.
Okay, great. Thank you.
We have a couple of people who have called in with possible answers to the quiz.
Oh, let's go with that.
Okay. Either of you want to read it?
I'll give it a shot. Yeah. What is the name given to a device that controls a wheel or bar to turn or to extend incrementally in one direction or in reverse?
Jono from Jersey City, what do you think?
I think it's called a servo.
No, but that's a good idea. But this would be a lot more mechanical.
Oh, darn.
Okay, but
thanks.
I love where you're going.
Dan, hi, you're on the air. Dan from Staten Island. Say it again.
I had the same answer, solenoid.
Okay, but no, more medieval.
That's right. Yes, more very medieval.
Okay, thanks.
This concept goes back thousands of years.
Okay, Linda, hi, you're on the air.
What do you think?
Hi. I had a question.
Oh, go ahead.
We're back to regular questions. So those were the two attempts.
Okay. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm a first-time homeowner, and it's a townhouse, and I bought it because I figured, okay, they would help with the maintenance, but that really hasn't been the case. So my question is more for the furnace and air conditioning unit.
Mm-hmm.
Do I have to have somebody come out and service them, like a yearly contract where they change the filter and whatever service it is they're doing, I don't know, or is it something that I can do myself?
What kind of heating system? First of all, you said this is a townhouse?
It's 3 bedrooms, 2 baths, 2,200 square feet, but there's central air.
Right.
Oh, it sounds nice. Yeah.
Where is this?
In Jersey City.
Yeah, okay, I know what we're talking about. Okay, I got you. And you have like two levels, downstairs, living room, dining room, kitchen, upstairs, bedrooms?
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. Okay. And you have a forced air heating system. So what you need to do is the things you can do is there are filters on the heating system that need to be changed. It's either in the compartment in the front or it's behind one of the return air register grill, and you could change those. As far as the gas service is concerned, once a year I would have the gas company come in and take a look at or a heating contractor come in and make sure that the gas burner is operating properly and not producing any carbon monoxide. And that you can do once a year or once every 2 years, but it should be done regularly.
It was built in 2009, and I think towards the end of last year I had to have somebody come out because the furnace wasn't turning on and there was a buildup of some kind of something.
Yeah, probably dirt in the system. Filters should be changed at least 4 times a year.
Thank you so much for calling us.
Okay.
Some people have been writing in.
Mm-hmm.
Adam in Bay Ridge asks, do you have any advice on how to remove dried excess grout from bathroom tile? Don't you just use a razor blade?
Yeah, well, X has, there are tools that you can buy that remove all the grout before you regrout it. Around the bathtub for even a semi-professional like myself, I don't like to use grout. I like to use what they call acrylic cork when I clean up everything. But the procedure is to take out as much of the old grout as you possibly can, scrape it out, wash it down with scouring powder and clean it up, and then even wipe it down with alcohol, and then apply, after it's dry, apply this acrylic cork into the corners and everything else, and then wipe it out with water and make it nice and smooth. It'll come out like a real professional job.
But to get the excess grout, one might want to use, like you suggested, a razor blade. A razor blade.
If he doesn't want to just get rid of the whole grout and do it.
Yeah, what's happened is, what I think he's done is he grouted the place and then he didn't wipe it all off quick enough. You got to get it off the same time you put it on.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
It's one job.
But you have to be careful because you don't want to put any scratches in it when you use a razor blade. Just
put it
flat and.
Or you can use a plastic spackle knife. They make plastic spackle knives.
Yeah, that works very well.
Yeah, that could work too. Also, use water at the same time and it will come off.
Bill in Dover, New Jersey says his home was built in 1936 and renovated in the 1960s. How does he verify what kind of wiring is in the house, aluminum or copper? And how important is it to replace all outlets with three-prong grounded?
Well, that's the thing that an electrician has to come in and take off, because you may have to scrape off some insulation off the wire and take a look at it. But there is devices that are made in order to accommodate both aluminum and copper. It's called COALA devices. And this is COALA stands for copper aluminum compatibility. And so those devices have to be put into place. Also, another thing is, if anybody has a copper and aluminum and they feel some heat coming out of an electrical outlet or even a switch plate or something like that, it's hotter than it's supposed to be, there may be something wrong, and that is time to call an electrician to check out to see if that switch is compatible with the wiring devices that you have.
Also, if he wants to really know if it's aluminum or copper, all he has to do is he can look inside the electrical panel box, and he can just look at some of these things, and he could see if it's a copper colored or aluminum colored.
Now, we have very little time. Geraldine left us. Okay. Nobody answered the quiz.
Mm-hmm. So we'll try again next month.
Now, a lot of people have not been able to get through because we only had – excuse me? Oh, somebody is correct. Oh, okay. Let's do you as a last call. Hi. This is Fletcher from Bed-Stuy. Yeah. Hi. What do you say it is?
I thought it was a ratchet.
All right. Well, you'll be given a prize. I'm going to put you on hold, and my producer will take your address. How did you know?
I'm a technician. I'm a lighting technician in the film industry, and we use ratchets a lot.
Okay.
Okay.
Well,
we got
it. I put you on hold. You guys will be back next month on the 15th, is it, of next month? Meanwhile, people can reach you, Larry.
At larry@accuratebuilding.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Larry Ubell at Twitter. And
thanks again. No, not this time.
And do it safely.
Akash Kapoor spent his formative years in India and his young adulthood in the United States. On tomorrow's show, he describes returning to India for good in 2003 and how much his homeland had changed and remained the same. And then a look at the small group of men and women who built one of the first computers, completing Alan Turing's vision of a universal machine. A History of the World in 100 Objects continues with a look at a Moche warrior pot used to guard the grave of a wealthy member of the South American Society, plus our underreported series. Leonard Lopez Show is produced by Blakeney Schick, Stephen Valentino, and Julia Corcoran. Melissa Egan's the executive producer, and we had help today from Jessica Miller, Sarah Waltuck, and contributing producer Christina Maldonado. Debbie Fountain was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopez, your host. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.